This program is transcribed from an earlier ABC release.
Washington again, February 25. Just a moment, I'll tell you what we're thinking about here today. Walkage talking. From Washington, damp and cloudy in the pre-dawn hours, emerging from a one-day snowfall which had largely disappeared when I dropped down through a high ceiling to a wet airport. 4 hours and 39 minutes away from a moonless Miami. There was to have been a big fellow over Biscayne Bay, but a shower curtained him temporarily and he had to go. He arrived early. I'd seen a preview of that moon at sundown when it rose a shadowy silver disk against the horizon of the Atlantic as we rode the ocean's gentle swells. Against it, white gulls, so far away they seemed no bigger than pinpoints, catching for a second the western light would flash like tiny meteors. Yes, on this weekend, I managed to squeeze in between many assignments a chance to catch fish. I caught a lot in the Indian River and also in the ocean. In this swing around the circle, I found the people keenly interested in the November elections. I saw Henry Wallace's tracks in Minnesota, where I nipped an ear in the bright, dry cold. Also in Florida, where I burned the other one in the winter's super sun. Feels pretty damp and chilly in these parts, I can tell you. After hobnobbing with cranes and crocodiles, palms and flame vine, and those hammocks of cypress clothed in the ghostly gray of the tree moss. Milder temperatures are predicted most everywhere. Florida continued, as it did through all the cold waves, tranquil and tropical. I hope it still continues, especially on the stretch between Miami and Fort Pierce right now. When I left, they were debating rent controls here. Today, the Senate passed the measure which the House approved. That's the stopgap one-month control. It's going to take a good deal of debate to reconcile that with the 14-month extension which the upper House had already voted, protection for the tenant. The House pigeonholed that measure, determined that no immediate revision of the status quo be settled upon, despite President Truman's appeal in absentia for continuation of the present regulation. Wrath seems to be rising here in several quarters over the raise in the steel prices that flashed out of a not altogether clear sky. But the boost, $5 a ton on semi-finished steel, was a shock when all the efforts were being made to check wage raises. Even Senator Taft voiced gratification over the administration's move to investigate possible violations of the antitrust law. Here's a topic that both the Republicans and the Democrats seem to agree upon. However, so far, the congressional investigation seems to be chiefly a matter of calling in the steel people to tell their side. What the steel men will say when they are called to testify next Tuesday perhaps can be gauged by the comments in the current issue of the industry's Bible, The Iron Age. That magazine attacks the gray market in aluminum sheets and says some increases in steel base prices by one steel company, and extras also, have been deferred pending the widespread hysteria over the increase in the semi-finished steel products. A group of steel products, which is a small percent of the total shipments and which have been selling close to the price of scrap for some time. Whether or not the major steel companies will boost prices on such products as strip and sheet remains to be seen. Iron Age then discusses the possibility of these other increases in other types of steel products. It says that the present boost is receiving more attention than it deserves because it was not explained in advance. On the score of any monopolistic price agreements, which the government is trying to smoke out, the magazine says, I'm quoting, the semi-finished steel price increases were not simultaneous, nor were they necessarily similar. No steel company would be willing, the paper says, to continue a low price on a small profit item when other firms were charging a higher quotation. And that apparently is the attitude of the steel people. It contains very little aid and comfort for the others who are trying to fight inflation. Returning to Washington, I find there is still a difference of opinion as to whether prices are going up high and then drop far down into a dangerous recession, or whether there is going to be an orderly retreat toward normal. The administration still feels brake should be applied now. Retrenchment doesn't seem to be the word in the business world. Some of the consumer groups are still trying to put a further squeeze on prices. And there isn't any apparent change in the drive for tax cuts. Washington may be a little bit too close to the economic wood to see the trees, but as nearly as I can gather here, the nonpartisan Opinion is that inflation is not licked, that the steel wage boost is one indication. The agriculturists are saying that there's a feeling the wheat crop is the uncertain element, too. Wheat might soar again. Meat prices, they insist, are going up. And there's a certain second wage raise demand coming with the steel prices giving it an impetus. One steel man, Ernest Weir, made some pessimistic remarks on the subject of a depression. Taking the exactly opposite tack of many of the farm state people, he said that European aid plan might cause a depression here, more serious than the threat of communism in Europe. He charged that the administration was using propaganda. Rather strange to find him with at least one foot in the same boat with candidate Wallace. He also wants more study of the question. Well, if they haven't had enough study by this time, I'm afraid there isn't much hope. However, he'll find some response among House members. Now, for an announcement, I'll be back with more news and comment in just a moment. Word from United States Army headquarters in Frankfurt, Germany, says a heavily armed Czech guard of their security police has sealed the Czech border. Well, they might as well have added, sealed the fate of Czechoslovakia's last fight for freedom against the Red Terror. Marxian Stalinism is offering the world one more example of its democratic methods in dealing with a majority murder. President Benes accepted the resignation of the remaining members of the cabinet, all but the communists had quit in protest, and now has accepted a new cabinet presented by Premier Gottwald. An all-red government is now being set up in accordance with the pattern of the subjugation of the other satellites, and the last flickering light of freedom, kept alive by the indomitable courage of the Czechs, is about to be extinguished for the second time in one generation. The fellow travelers who traveled with the swastika while Moscow budded with the Nazis now applauds the second dictatorship, Stalin's instead of Hitler's. But what's in a name? A red rose by any other color smells as sweet to them. To New York Daily Worker columnist Joseph Starobin, this is merely as it was in Hungary, getting rid of the Quislings, and he echoes Pravda's charge of a foreign plot, led, we presume, by that foreigner Benes and Maziri. O tempora, o mores. Exactly what is happening to the plan to partition Palestine is certainly has become entwined in legalism. But this must be understood. I recall reporting before the United States made its position clear that an international police force could not be called upon, if such existed, to enforce partition, since the Security Council is the only body which under the charter could take such a step, and the Security Council could not enforce a measure of which it had not approved. It was the Assembly, you know, which acted, and the Assembly can merely recommend in matters where a threat to world peace is involved. In other words, the Security Council must declare such a threat exists, and it cannot do this, that is, the Security Council cannot, unless it approves the recommendation for partition made by the Assembly. Here, the advocates of world government might speak up. For American delegate Austin based his argument, in part at least, on the fact that, according to the Charter of the United Nations has only the right to maintain international peace and security. It has not the right to impose a political decision, such as the partition plan. If the United Nations had that right, it would have the powers of a world government, the power to involve the armed forces of member nations in internal disputes. The United States proposed to the executive that the Executive Council name a special committee composed of the United States, Russia, Britain, France, and China to consult with the Jews and Arabs on the basis of partition. Of course, if an agreement could be reached, that would mean the Executive Council would accept it, since all the countries with the veto power would be included in that committee. Today, Colombia also made a suggestion, asked the special session of the Assembly be called, proposed that the Big Five consult on joint action necessary to meet any threat to peace or breach of the peace arising from partition. Also that the Big Five try to iron out the Arab-Jewish differences, and then meanwhile Britain postpone her evacuation until August 1st. She won't do that. Much depends on Russia. Russia's also been asked by the Big Four deputies for a list of what she's taken out of Austria. The Benelux representatives will join the others in London shortly to express their views on expanding German production. The domestic political situation certainly grows no milder. Although I've been traveling south of Mason-Dixon, I learned less about the southern defection there than can be learned here. There, I found some bewilderment. Here, Senator McClellan, Democrat of Arkansas, told an AP reporter that the time may come when the party may realize that Truman cannot win. Pretty strong words for a Democrat. Maybe then, McClellan added, we can get another nominee. The strategy, they tell us, of Mr. McClellan and his six senatorial colleagues who want to split clear and even is now to eliminate Truman as a candidate so they can take the fight out of the party by putting up a nominee who will not push the civil rights bill. Secretary of State Marshall was talked about, but he said flatly he wouldn't run for any office. Senator Byrd has been mentioned against his request. I heard plenty of high words for Byrd in the South, as always. Two leading Texan Republicans are out for Dewey, although the Texas National Committeeman supports Taft. There's hope here, I find, among Vandenberg supporters, that Taft has gained enough strength to kill off Dewey. Speaker Joe Martin is still being hopefully groomed as the dark horse if Dewey is squeezed out. But his training stable is giving out no information to the press. The Sun came out. That makes things a little bit better for the just and the unjust. And I am hoping that a silver sea-bright lining will be exposed if clouds have gathered elsewhere. That's all, and thanks very much. Now a word from your announcer.